and welcome to episode 1387 of The Sleeper and the Bust. It is Monday, March 10th. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined this afternoon by Justin Mason. Justin, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. It is afternoon for me. I just double checked.
I checked. I was ready.
You're on top of it, baby. There we go.
I'm ready to go. It's SP day. How can I not be amped?
It's like the best day of the year. Let's be honest. Like my favorite podcast of the year is always like the SP guide kind of conversation.
I love talking pitchers, obviously, and it's fun to go through. Obviously, we're going to have several episodes. You might not be here for some of them. I'm thinking about maybe getting with Joe while you're in New York. Maybe
which is okay. What I'll do is I'll listen and while I'm on the plane, I'll have critiques
when you return. Exactly. Yeah.
And I think what we can probably do is either continue from where you guys left off, or we could just put my SP ranks versus your SP ranks and just yell at each other.
I also like that. I think that will be fun too. I got it set up today. Well, we're going to go through, it looks like the top 16 or so, which is crazy because it fits a certain somebody who we were always going to get to today regardless. Yeah. So even if it's going a little long and we lop off that third tier, that final thing on the sheet there is still definitely going to happen today. But yeah, he is that high. Wow. But you have him even higher. We're going to get to it. We have news. Unfortunately, it's all bad. It's just all bad news. And that's March. That is a March tradition unlike any other. It's unfortunate. But when isn't it going to be the case in March? And, you talked on Potapalooza about how you kind of jinxed it. You're like, oh, we're having a great spring. Not too much bad news. And then bing, bang, bong. All in a row. Grayson Rodriguez, we covered the other day. Two more have fallen to different degrees. But first, we're going to talk about a hitter before we get into the pitchers. And we'll start with Francisco Alvarez. 6 to 8 weeks with left-hand surgery for the old fabled hamate. I remember this was a big thing several years ago. Everyone was getting hamate surgeries like it was the chic thing to do. I'm not saying it doesn't happen anymore. It's just not as covered, I guess, or as worried about. Maybe it doesn't sap power the same level. I don't know. But it used to be like, oh my God, their power will never come back. They are having hamate surgery. I'm joking about the severity of the reaction, but it's something where you're like, dang, you don't want a power guy getting that because it can eat up some of their power a little bit, even upon return. How does a hamate surgery to the left hand, which would be the bottom hand for Francisco Alvarez, how does that impact him and how you feel? 6 to 8 weeks, that's a bit of time here.
Yeah, I updated my ranks for Fangraphs today for the catcher ranks, and it dropped him considerably.
Understandable.
The math on it pretty much made him a negative value player in 12 team leagues.
Totally get that.
In two totally catcher, get that. 12 team leagues. Yep. So it puts him outside of kind of like the top 24 in terms of catchers, at least for me. You just don't know how long he's actually going to be out for. You know, they say 6 to 8 weeks. That can always be longer. You can always re-injure. And then, mm-hmm. I mean, these kind of injuries, they tend to sap power when guys come back. And what is Francisco Alvarez without power?
He lost some power last year, too, right? Like, yeah. We saw the big power outage from 23 to 24 for the 23-year-old. Sorry to be confusing there. I was saying years. But, yeah, he's only 23, which is great. There's upside. People were excited. Maybe he takes a power step or regains the power that we saw in 2023 and clubs 25, 30 homers. Dropped down to 11 last year. Now you have the hamate. I totally get. I mean, the average was always bad. So I totally get why he's even outside the top 24 right now. I'm definitely not drafting him in the NFBC universe. And frankly, I'm not sure I'm that interested in trying to spend a IL spot unless it's unlimited. And then it's a different calculus at that point for Alvarez.
Yeah, I just think there's so many other guys. I wasn't particularly high on Alvarez to begin with.
Okay.
He was a guy that I just think strikes out too much, puts the ball on the ground too much. And I think people were still kind of living on the hype of him's prospect pedigree a little bit.
Sure.
I wasn't out, but now I'm out.
Like, he's 23. I can get it. If he was your guy, I got it. Like, I understood the people that were after Francisco Alvarez in a good lineup, has shown power potential before. You're not betting completely on the come. We've seen it. We're just a year removed from it. So I got it. But for me, it was just like, I'll go with the more established version of Francisco Alvarez, known by the name of Shea Bengaliers. And I'll just, you know, gladly take him. And now, of course, with the Hamate, that is rendered moot because I would never touch Alvarez at this point. Let's talk the two pitcher injuries. Gerrit Cole's is the worst of the two. So we'll start with him, even though he's lower on the rankings than George Kirby, who we're going to get to in a moment. Seeking second opinions on his bunk elbow. I can't remember every time someone's been seeking a second opinion, Justin, but has there ever been a time where that turns out well, where they seek a second opinion and are like, you know what? It's fine. Ever. That you can Tanaka. Remember. Tanaka. Okay. Okay.
That's, I mean, but that,
that's a pretty that's good like, one.
That's one example.
And he just... What went and found somebody who said yes, you can play through it, because that's all he did was just play through it, and he was still pretty good.
I think he got like a PRP injection or something like that.
That makes sense. Here's the thing: a lot of guys have a measure of tear in their UCL.
Yeah,
a lot of guys who we don't even hear about, you know, having an issue. Like, I don't think anybody's is like 100% perfect, at least as I understand it. And I remember learning more during the Tanaka situation because everyone's like, oh my God, he's going to play through. And it's like, if you knew all the guys that were playing through some level, right? It's all about degrees too. But we had the big situation last year with Gerrit Cole. He finished strong, you know, obviously maybe not in the World Series there with the not covering first for Yankees fans. But like, he looked like Gerrit Cole. So he was coming in with a lot of pomp and circumstance again, like, hey, we're ready to draft this guy. Not quite the tippy top of the ranks, but he was still being regarded very highly. And now this is going to plummet him down the board in the NFBC spheres for sure. Pick 251 in the last 12 RotoWire Online Championships, which is 12 team, three of which he didn't even go in.
He shouldn't be drafted. I mean, at this point, like, and I understand, like, if you want to take him in the last 10 rounds of a draft, fine, whatever. Like, I guess, like, you can take the gamble because you're going to drop most of those guys anyways, right?
You took the gamble last year on him.
I did in the main event, and it paid off. I was able to hold on to him, and I was able to, use him, and he was good down the stretch.
Big difference is there was clarity on that. You knew that there was this X amount of time. Obviously, it's not perfect. It could have been more or less even, too. But there was some
I also regretted the move the moment I did it. Like, right. It was like...
Until he started coming through in the summer, you were like, God, why did I do this?
Yeah, it was a huge mistake.
Gerrit Cole we're talking about. Sorry. Go ahead.
I just don't want to risk this. Like, it's just... he will not be on my board. In the main event, I need to actually update his rank or his innings total in my pitcher ranks. I'm going to do that as we speak.
There's just no shot I'm taking him in the NFBC universe. And again, just to reiterate for those that don't play, 7 reserves, no IL. And especially right now, right? If you have a draft right now where you're having to take somebody like Cole with the uncertainty that it could just be the end of his season... No, absolutely not. I cannot do it.
It's just too risky. It really is. Like, it, the chance, unless you have unlimited IL. So, for instance, I am going to Tout Wars on Wednesday, right? My draft is Saturday night. They have unlimited IL spots.
Totally different scenario.
Is that a place where I might put a buck or two on him at the end of the auction? Sure, because I get to replace him right away, and I can just hold him forever because I don't have to worry about filling up my IL. But even if, like, I have 3 IL spots, I'm just not doing it. Those 3 IL spots will fill up so quickly.
They could fill up in the rest of spring.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. We're not done. We're just starting on this part of the season, this awful part where bad injuries just keep flying.
And here's the really bad part. And one of the reasons why I talk about, and Brett is saying, not to mention the injury from last spring that could also still be in the mix. I mean, I think this is the injury from last spring.
Yeah, cropping back up. Yeah, that's fair.
But this is why, like, I stay away. If a guy has had especially multiple instances of elbow issues over the course of the last few seasons, this is why I stay away from this. Why, like, I won't be drafting a Brian Wu, even though I love Brian Wu from a skills, straight skills perspective. I'll use him in DFS. I'm not going to use him in a season long fantasy league just because I'm afraid this kind of thing. Like, if these things aren't addressed, they crop back up. I know, like, you're really high on Gavin Williams and Nick and Eric really high on Gavin Williams. I'm scared about Gavin Williams because he's had this reoccurring elbow thing going on, and he throws so violently. Like, I'm staying away from those kind of guys. And I understand
I don't know about Wu being like, right? Like, I don't know. It was at the very beginning of last year. It was inflammation.
But it was also the year before.
But it was also inflammation. I don't know. That was right forearm inflammation versus right elbow, at least what I'm looking at here. I don't know. I get that they're interconnected. I get that they're interconnected.
And it's not so much like, and like, don't get me wrong, like, do I have like Wu like ranked for only like 70 innings? No. Like,
because the hamstring was the second injury.
Yeah. I have
that Wu, he had in the summer.
I have Wu projected for 125. But like, that's not enough to like give you volume to win in fantasy. And so he gets pushed way down my ranks. And that's okay. And you said it during Potapalooza, I draft scared. I do.
Yes,
and
you do.
I'm totally fine.
Took with one that draft for you to draft stupidly.
$1,600 literally set on fire, by drafting the opposite.
I'm getting all these great deals. Mm-hmm. Are you, Justin? Are you? All right. So no, I do understand being cautious with injuries though, to the best of your ability, because again, even the safe guys aren't safe. Few guys considered more safe than George Kirby, and I love him. I'm not dogging him out or anything, but by process, this is perfectly encapsulating my point with underscoring that though, is by virtue of the fact that you're pitching, you are a heavy injury risk. The split between the safe and unsafe is, that's my point. It's not to say that Chris Sale isn't a bigger risk, or Jacob deGrom, or whomever with the bevy of injuries on their ledger. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the split is like this. There is no this split when it comes to pitcher safety.
I do think that there is a bigger split than you do, but I did.
Based on what though? The fact that their pitch, like everyone, like it's such a trite phrase, I get it, but everyone's one pitch away, man.
Everybody is. And I said this somewhere.
Big can the split really be? And I know this is not precision, me doing my hands apart for those that aren't watching, but like I'm keeping them very close, but like, why even perceive such a split? Just understand that there is inherent risk with pitching.
I think you should just understand that there's inherent risk with pitching. This is why we don't take up, like, this is why, like, even when NFBC pushes up their starting pitchers, like, we're not taking seven pitchers in the first round, right?
Right.
Or 30 pitchers just in the first four rounds, right?
Yeah.
There's still, because there is inherent risk, right? You can just be more confident that your first round guy that's a hitter is going to stay healthy. Now, that doesn't always end up being true, right?
It's years and years of data that says they're going to be healthier. Not guaranteed. So, nothing's guaranteed. That's why they play the games. Again, another trite phrase. I get it, but it's a cliche for a reason. But generally speaking, you can have a lot more confidence in a hitter than a pitcher from a health standpoint.
It's more a matter of the accumulation of red flags, right? When you're dating a girl, they're going to have a red flag or two. But when you start seeing multiple red flags, that's when you're supposed to run, right? I didn't. I married my red flag. She's not going to listen to this until someone tags her in it. But like, you know, for me, pitching in general, it is an unnatural motion. It
puts especially at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, especially when you're 95, 100 miles an hour, right? So that's a red flag just starting out the gate. Like you said, every pitcher has risk. When you start adding more injuries, we know that the thing that predicts future injury is previous injury. So
one of the best things.
Yes.
Not the only thing.
Not the only thing, but one of the best things. So when you start adding in multiple red flags, I start going, okay, is it worth the cost? And I think there's sometimes where it is, right? Like, I'm not out on Jacob deGrom. We're going to talk about him during this episode, mm-hmm. right? Like, there are a lot of red flags with Jacob deGrom. But man, the green flags just wave so bright that I'm.
Is there a lot? There's one. He could get hurt. And he's old, I guess, too.
Well, like, I'm just talking about the number of injuries.
The bevy of injuries. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sorry, I was taking too literally there.
Yeah, each injury is a red flag for me. So when you start holding multiple.
Well, in that instance, though, I would come back around and say, because Nick's been pointing this out. he doesn't actually have a lot of injuries.
No, he actually doesn't. And this is why it's taken out,
but it hasn't been like this injury, that injury, this injury. You know, it's not like that for DeGrom.
And hence why I'm actually okay drafting him, right? And like, so we'll talk about this here more in a minute, but like,
yeah, let's finish up Kirby and then dive in. So Kirby has shoulder inflammation. He is definitely the least of the three here with the Grayson, Cole, Kirby trio of devastation that we got here as main events kicked off. He even wanted to pitch through it. Like, inflammation is certainly not the end of the world. And again, there's degrees to all of this, but it is something that you could have pitched through in a different circumstance, right? You'll often hear guys talk about an injury in the context of like, if this was the playoffs, I would still be out there or whatever. He didn't say that for this, but again, he wanted to try to just pitch through it and just see what happens. And they're like, no. We got a whole season here. You are way too important to us. We're going to go ahead and put you on the sideline. We got Emerson Hancock, who's a very, you know, perfectly cromulent guy that we can put in. We got four more studs behind you. We're going to take this a little bit slowly. So he's going to begin the season on the IL. It is creating a discount. Of course, he's gone in the 10th round of both mains that we've seen so far. And to me, that's a good enough discount. I'm in. I'm ready to take George Kirby if he stays in the 10th. Now, I don't draft for another couple weeks here, 2 weeks to be exact. And so by then, news could evolve. A more firm timeline could be out. People could just be more comfortable with him in general. Where do you come out with Kirby? How far down your board did he move? You're muted once an episode, minimum. You're not even smoking either. It's usually when you light up a cig. Oh, God damn it. There it is.
So I haven't updated his projection yet, but let's do that now. Because I think you need to take off probably three starts.
I was going to say three. Yep.
And so when you take off, let's say, 16 innings, that will likely bring him down to about 175 because I'm for 191.
That's not going to ding him too much, I don't think.
It's going to ding him a fair amount, actually.
Pretty good.
So it's going to drop him out of the top 18, so around 20.
Oh, that's not much because that's actually lower than I. When you factor in reliever, yeah, that's even lower than I put him.
Yeah. So yeah. No. So in terms of
that's not as low as I put him. I'm sorry. I should say I moved him even lower, just kind of eyeballing it, and I think I need to maybe inch him back up to around that 20 spot because I'm looking at it right now and like
21 versus where it would drop him.
21 amongst starters. Yeah, and I got Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober right there at 19, 20. I think Kirby right behind him at 21. I think I'm going to agree with you. I had him 26. And so I'm going to just move because I was just kind of gut moving it. I'm not that worried. I'm not. And it is something I will take that discount because I mean, look at the 10th round. You're not getting, you know, pure certainty in that area anyway. So sure, some of it's built in on the front end, and we do often say don't invite injury. I get it. But nothing is universal, right? Nothing's like, don't ever take a guy who's injured. It's always the dumbest move ever. No, generally be careful to do it, but assess and see if it's worth doing. And I look in the 10th round and I see George Kirby going there, and I'm like, yeah, I will do that because let me see the other guys that are going around there with him. Sorry, I'm trying to find this board here and it's driving me nuts that I can't. Okay, I got it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Someone cut off the round numbers there. Okay, so Kevin Gausman is in that round. It's actually a bunch of closers, so it's not helping. Jack Flaherty. The next round is Ryan Pepiot, Carlos Rodon, Kodai Senga. I've made my point. I mean, none of those guys are anywhere near certain. I will gladly take George Kirby in the 10th round. Frankly, I might scoop him in the 8th or 9th. Just to secure him, because I am pretty confident that when he comes back, he should be good to go. So that one does not bother me too much. Your mileage may vary. I respect everyone's way to handle injury, except yours. I make fun of you, respect it. It does. You are trying to cut out some of that uncertainty, and I totally get that.
I'm just more open to it
with some guys.
On Potapalooza, which I will release the Potapalooza episode with you, me, Nick, and Jason on the Sleeper on the Bus feed. Everything else will go on the Friends Fantasy Benefits feed. But he like talked about like a lot of guys go through this early in spring, yes. right? They're ramping up. They, you know, they start feeling tight in the shoulder and they end up being fine. And this is just happening at a point where he is going to likely miss, you know, two or three starts going in the 10th round. Like, I think that's a totally fair price. Of a 15 team draft. Like
both of the mains, both main boards. Yeah. I've seen him and he went in the 10th in both. And I named those guys that George Kirby's going around. Who's scared by that? I mean, like,
yeah.
Cause
I'm totally fine by that.
Yeah. If you're not taking him there, then you're not taking the other guys.
Cause yeah, exactly.
They're much scarier and maybe you're not. And in that case, okay. You know, more power to you. But you can't tell me that you'd rather take Carlos Rodon and Kodai Senga over Kirby just because Kirby's nicked right now. I'm sorry. Like, you can say that. You're free to say that. But I'm free to then laugh at you because you do not make sense to me. All right, let's get into the rankings here. Shohei obviously always shows up at the top because he is pitcher eligible. But he is worth talking about here because we're talking... not going to receive as many plate appearances. That's on the hitting side, of course. Not going to steal as many bases. I think we all knew that coming in regardless. And now they're saying maybe they're going to take it even easier with the pitching situation. I think we were all looking at like late April, early May, and they're like, eh, let's dial that back. So we got news that they're slowing down the pitching rehab because they don't need to push it, and they just don't really know. The quote was they... just don't know when the NL MVP will take the mound. So, because most leagues treat him as both, you're still getting the hitter, still an amazing hitter, but where are you on Shohei right now with this recent news to both the pitching and hitting side? Two bits of news, both negative for the fantasy landscape.
I mean, I wasn't drafting him as a pitcher. Like, so, like, in Yahoo, where he is, like, a pitcher,
right.
There's a pitcher version and hitter version. I even told some of my chat today, like, I'm not drafting him as a pitcher. Like, I just would kick him off my board. Like, to me, his value is as a hitter. I still think he is a top three hitter. Even if they, you know, limit a few of the plate appearances. Like, yeah. He's just too valuable, especially as we start to get in the summer when guys are going to be, like, banged up on that Dodgers team. Like, they're gonna need him to hit. Like, I just think I think it's smart for them to just take it really, really easy as a pitcher because we don't want to see him get hurt, and they want to have him available in October potentially. So this doesn't like lower him in my overall ranks, but as a pitcher, like, I have zero interest as Ohtani as a pitcher. I'm just interested in him as a hitter this year.
Same. And so in those formats where they do have to split him up, bye. I'm good. Yeah. You guys can have him.
Yeah. Like he in Tout Wars, he's a hitter and there's a pitcher version. Like, I will bid on the hitter version. I will not be bidding.
And I'll still bid high. I'm not really moved by the news on the, like, okay, that's fine. I'm not penciling him in for 50-50 again, nor was I penciling Acuna in for 70 steals. Everyone's freaking out about that. I'm going to steal less news. Take it in, and it's important. But I think people are overreacting a little bit on that from Acuna. I understand it's a second leg injury, right? Both knees busted up now. But even if he steals like 25 from the time he comes back with, you know, good average homers, runs, ribbies, like, he's still awesome. So I haven't landed on Acuna. He's not somebody I'm chasing because I don't want the missed time. Again, I play mostly NFBC Universe, folks. So a lot of that is seen through the prism of having no IL. But I don't think you have to be worried that, like, Acuna is going to steal 12 bases next year. So anyway, let's get into pitchers proper here because Shohei is always his own entity. Paul Skeens is the number one guy among true pitchers over Skubal. Outrage, absolute outrage. But he is a Paul S with a great mustache, so I can only be so upset about it. He does have a min of 5, and I'm looking from March 7th through March 10th. Can do really tight windows now and get a lot of data. But that's a RotoWire online championship. That's 12 drafts. That's a pretty representative sample. And it gets us up on the latest news so we can see where things are going. Like I mentioned, Cole didn't even go in 3 of these drafts. That's how up to date we are here. So Skeens is number one pitcher with an average draft pick of 11, a min of 5, and a max of 16. Ooh, getting him on the turn is nice with a big hitter. Are you taking any Skeens in the first?
Probably not.
Is he your number one pitcher? Is it Skubal?
It's Skubal. So I don't have any problems with someone taking Skeens in the first. I'm always just going to take Scooble if I'm going to go pitcher in the first. I don't think I will be going pitcher in the first in any drafts remaining. I only have one snake draft, maybe two if I do a like beat Justin Mason league. And I just can't imagine I'm going to take a pitcher in the first round this year. I just think the depth at the top at starting pitching is so deep that I'm okay waiting. And I think the offensive players are just too good.
And that first round depth. Yeah. Too rich. Yeah.
Well, even like the second round depth is.
Yeah. Bring Scoobs in here, by the way. 13th ADP, 10 and 17 are his min and max, though. Not going nearly as high. And that only takes one person. Maybe it was just one person who took Skeens at 5 to push his max or his min 5 picks higher than Scooble. They're generally late first rounders. I have no beef with anyone who takes them. Got to make up a little bit on offense, but getting an ace is incredible, especially if they go out and do their thing for 180 plus of greatness. Scooble's your number one. He's mine. I think just more of the same this year and potential for more wins. I think the team is better. You know, they rallied down the stretch in the second half. I think as a baseline, obviously I'm a Tigers fan. I guess he did get 18 wins last year. Never mind. I take that back. We pretty much won every time he pitched. Don't plan for 18. It's tough to put that on anybody. Put him down for like 15 in a projection, I would. And that's I could feel pretty confident about that. Okay. So yeah, I'm good with that. You know, there's wiggle room in the ERA. Doesn't have to put up another 239 to be worth it. Probably going to be a sub one whip, doesn't walk anybody. So confident in his stuff that he's given it away, given Robbie Ray his changeup, which I love. Very intrigued to see how Robbie Ray does with that. So I think it's just more of the same that you're going to have to say about Scooble than Skeens, except that you have Scooble a little bit higher, right? You're not taking him in the first, but he is your number one pitcher and we move on. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I have him a lot more than a little bit higher. I mean,
that's fine.
Yeah. I have them about $6 apart in value.
Okay. So you're firmly Scoobs over Skeens, and I have no quibbles with that either. Not just because it's my favorite team. You got a much more firm track record. You have a better team context, even if you don't think the Tigers are great. I don't know how anybody could have them worse than the Pirates. So yeah, absolutely agree that they can be a part there. Tier two. This is where we start to get into the meat of things. We got a wide range here from some established aces that have been doing it for a while to some newcomers, including Mr. Garrett Crochet, who goes next, Zach Wheeler, Logan Gilbert, Chris Sale, Corbin Burns, Cole Reagans, Dylan Cease, and Jacob DeGrom. We're going to hit them all, so we'll just take them in order. In those two main events that we saw, we got an inkling that Garrett Crochet is probably going to have a late first, early second ADP. I think that is something that we can feel pretty confident in. He went fourth pick of the second round in the first one, and then sixth pick. So maybe he's more in that early second round. I still think he's going to have some first round picks for sure. And I still think when full main season's going, when there's, you know, several a day, that 13, 14, 15, 16 range.
He won't be a first round pick in every draft, but he will be a first round pick in a number in of drafts.
Many drafts. Yes. That's kind of how I feel about Crochet. What do you think about him?
I do feel like the last week he will be a first round pick in virtually every draft.
So well, especially if we get another handful of injuries to top 20 pitchers, right? Keep that in mind too. That's only going to push people to be like, well, now I really got to get my guy because my three backups are gone. Yeah. And look, I understand some trepidation with Crochet, but even before he was going to the Red Sox, I was fine with his wins. I don't think that the White Sox are going to be historically bad again. I think they're just going to be regular bad. And so I think that he could have gotten wins with them. Obviously going to the Red Sox is an improvement, but I already had him so high that I couldn't really move him off of that trade. Like, what was I going to do? Move him to two? I have him four. So I guess I could have moved him to three, but I kept Zach Wheeler there. But I love Crochet. He was just unbelievable last year. This was not a guy that was completely out of nowhere in terms of like, we had expectation for him. He's a former number 11 overall pick. It just came a bit quicker than we expected because he missed all of 2022 and only pitched 12 and two thirds in 2023. And then boom, he's an ace. But I believe it. I'm in. I'm willing to take the gamble at the high end pick here because he's healthy. He's healthy right now. And right, he's got some concerns in his history, but I'm just not going to be moved off of Garrett Crochet because of those concerns. Where does he come out for you?
I have Garrett Crochet as my number 7 starter. Okay. I have him kind of in. So like if I were to tier out my ranks, which I don't really do, right. I would have a tier of one with Scooble, mm-hmm. and then I'd have a mini tier of two for spots two and three.
Skeens and Wheeler?
Skeens and Logan Gilbert.
Oh, okay. Love it. Love it. You're going to get some Gilbert hype going here in a minute. Yeah. I like that. I love Gilby.
Oh, sorry. It would be a tier of three with Skeens, Gilbert, and then Wheeler. So
okay, so Wheeler's in the mix there.
Yeah. And then I have another mini tier of three. And this mini tier of three are all guys that I think have the ability to just be the best pitchers of baseball. But I have concerns. They're scary to me.
It's got to be Sale, DeGrom, and Crochet then, right?
Yeah, it's Sale, DeGrom, Crochet, and that is the order. So I have Crochet as my seventh starting pitcher. I think you can make the argument, at least for me, to have him five or six.
Sure. I think seven's fine, though. It's representative. And, you know, again, we just opened the show talking about our risk assessment profiles being a little bit different. So I understand. There's also not a lengthy track record here. So if you're a track record and injury concerned person with your rankings, then you're going to be on the lower end with Crochet. That's okay. But Justin still has him seven. So it's not like you're running for the hills
from him.
I've
drafted Crochet this year. I just know that, like, I'm not going to end up with him in my main event.
Me neither, by the way.
I was moved to really push
him up from First Pitch Arizona, talking with everybody out there, chief among them, Mr. Nick Pollock, among others. And just really coming to the real, because I was kind of straddling the fence of like, I want to push him up there and like show that I really care about this guy and believe in him. But I was kind of hemming and hawing. I kind of had him in that 9-10-11 range in my original ranking for Crochet. And then I just got confidence talking to everyone. I was like, what are we worried about here? He's healthy right now. And this is before the trade.
It's all about health and workload for me. Like, sure. I think if you're comfortable that he can get 260 innings, which is what I have projected for him, and you're comfortable with the health, you should, I have no problem people putting him third. Like we just ball, right? Like, I'm a little more hesitant, especially in deeper formats, to take him as like a top three starting pitcher.
Because I get that. I think you should back him up. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I think you should back him up. If you're going to go with any of the three from your danger tier there, DeGrom, Sale, yeah. and Crochet, back him up with a stud. And I just got done saying there's no such thing as like certainty. So I'm not saying it has to be like Fromber or Logan, the guys that we generally see as like the premier workhorses. Anybody. It could actually be another guy that's kind of risky, even if you want. Just another pitcher pretty soon after. So that in a 15-team league, if Crochet goes down, you're not left holding the bag on nothing. It doesn't have to be that way. I'm not saying like that's the only way to draft these guys, but if you share some of that trepidation and yet you want to be in on these guys, then go Crochet and Dylan Cease, or go Crochet. And it can, like I said, it can be Fromber or Webb. It doesn't have to be somebody who's seen as safe. I would just get my SP2 a lot quicker than I normally do, because I don't usually get big SP2s because I go ace pitcher, ace starter, ace closer.
Yeah.
And that, but if I did go DeGrom, Crochet, Sale, I might have to push my closer down a little bit and get that SP2 mixed in.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think like for me, like if I'm going to end up with a guy like DeGrom or Crochet or Sale, it's going to be something like I have a top three pick. I take one of those hitters I love in the top three, and then mm-hmm. like I double tap. Like a Sale and a Corbin Burns, or I mean, I don't think Logan Gilbert would make it that far second round. But if he did, it'd be like a Logan Gilbert and a Crochet or a Logan. But I think for me, at least on Crochet, he won't be there. And so I just can't imagine I'm going to end up with Crochet at any more drafts the rest of the way.
Especially the ones that you have left, right? He's just going to have enough juice to be taken earlier in those drafts without mm-hmm. a doubt. All right, let's talk. I think Gilby is next. Oh, no, Wheeler's next. The old boring guy at this point. And, you know, he's actually an interesting case point in the idea of, like, don't get too bogged down in somebody being an injured guy who's never going to emerge, because he was kind of left for dead in his mid-20s. And understandably so. I'm not even casting aspersions here. He missed all of 15 and 16. Zero innings. and only 86 innings that weren't good in 2017. So for all intents and purposes, Zach Wheeler missed three seasons in his mid-20s. And what sort of confidence could you really have? Boom, bounces back in 2018 with a real solid like mid-rotation type season. Follows it up again in 19 with a similar mid-rotation type season. They were volume seasons, 182, 195 on the innings, mid to upper threes ERA, a good whip in the first one, 112, and then a 126 whip in the second season. So that one wasn't as good. So kind of like a two and a half, three starter season in 2018, and then like a four starter in 2019. And then, obviously, the shittiest year in the universe, 2020, comes along. His first year with Philly, he was amazing, but what stock could we really put into it? It was 11 starts. A lot of wacky stuff happened. So we didn't even really know that he had emerged into this acehood yet until 2021 came along. And he dropped 7.5 WAR, according to BREF, because that's the page I'm on right now, 278 ERA, 101 WHIP, league high 213 innings. Remember, they were keeping, first off, that's about what leads the league now. But even back in 2021, coming off the 2020 season, people weren't even pushing the 220 mark at that point anymore. That was already done. And he's just been a god since. He did have the little ERA spike in 23 up to 361, but all the indicators said that that kind of happened to him more than anything that Zach Wheeler did. He was right back down last year at 257. He's still been elusive on that Cy Young with a couple of second place Cy Young finishes. But even at 35, I believe he could still win a National League Cy Young as early as this year. And I've got no problem with anyone taking him really anywhere from three on. I don't think you can make a case to take him above Skeens or Skubal. Maybe above Skeens if you're just somebody who needs to see more than a year. I could understand that a little bit, but definitely not above Skubal. But after that, it's open season for Zach Wheeler. Tell us about what you got for Wheels here.
Yeah, I mean, I have Wheeler as my number four SP. I think you've said it. He's about as stable as you get. It seems a little crazy to me that he's 35.
Right. He's been around forever at this. But then when you think back on it, right, it's like he has been around forever.
I just think for me, it feels like it ages me because I remember when Wheeler was a Giants prospect that we traded away for what was the Beltran deal?
The Beltran, yes.
Yeah, for half a season of Beltran.
That didn't go so well. And we knew at the time that that was like a big deal. Like you were trading a premium prospect there to get a stud. Beltran was a stud.
And then it felt great when he got hurt. We were all like, this is why you trade these
pitching prospects, dude. They're nothing guaranteed.
And then he turns into Zach Wheeler.
Beltran wasn't the best for y'all. Oh no, he was actually excellent. Excuse me. I thought he was a little weaker after the trade. He was unreal. 159 OPS plus for y'all. He absolutely cooked in that half season. Like you said, though, y'all just didn't win, which was unfortunate. Yeah. But yeah, not too much else to say about Wheels. We both had four.
I think this is a good case study on why you reevaluate guys every year.
Right.
Because there are guys who have red flags that eventually you can let them put those red flags down and just go, I'm now, like, you know, it's kind of like my love affair and hate affair with Dansby Swanson, you know?
Yes. It's evolved over time.
And then I love Dansby Swanson, and then I hate him, back in on him. Like, reevaluate every year. Don't let previous notions of who a guy is determine whether or not you're going to draft them or not. And really reevaluate every year.
It's easy to do that because there's so many players that if you're like can mentally check them off, you're like, oh, I already know that. I don't have to look in. But you need to do the work. Yep. You need to look in every year or else you miss out on guys because you have your preconceived notions hurting you. And, you know, they can hurt you one way or the other. You could be too high or too low. It's not just necessarily that you're too low on a guy that you don't raise back up, but you can stay in too long on a guy too who's starting to come down. If you were going to have any concern, it's that he's 35. But again, I can't be bothered to freak out about that. Age can get a guy at any moment, but that is more of a nebulous thing that like can just happen to a player. There's nothing in the Wheeler profile that would make you scared other than the fact that his age is 35. All right, let's keep going. Your boy Gilby is up next, and I love that you got him juiced up, looking good here. You said as your number three, right?
Yeah, as my number three guy. It's just the volume, man. Like all he does is volume. And you know, I talk about my concerns with guys like Sale, with guys like DeGrom, with guys like Crochet. And I have zero concerns about Gilbert. Yes, any pitcher can get hurt at any time. But if you were going to tell me only one pitcher got to over 200 innings this year, I bet pretty much the house it's Logan Gilbert. I just think he's about as safe as he's get. He's got that great park to pitch in.
Yep.
Yes, I wish the Mariners were better, but I think Gilbert is just a quiet, solid ace that I love to start my rotation with. And I have in multiple leagues, including TGFBI, where I started off with Logan Gilbert and then wrapped around and got my second kind of ace in Pablo Lopez.
Hot, hot heat there. I like that. Always been a Gilbert guy. Always want to temper the notion that Gilbert and Kirby were different in terms of overall expectation. So I'm back padding a little bit on that because people always wanted to split them. And I'm like, nope, they are Spider-Man meme all the way. My first reference to that meme. I know I reference it all the time, but I just saw them as so similar from a statistical standpoint. Whenever I do that, I'm making a statistical profile comparison, not always like how they pitch and all that, but they were just the same kind of guy. High volume studs, in a great place to pitch on a solid team. And I use solid there instead of good just because the offense does suck. So they do have to work hard for their wins, but they usually have a good bullpen support too. So if they leave with a lead, you feel pretty darn good that even if it's only a one run lead, that they're going to hold it there in Seattle for them. So Gilbert, he's still standing right now, whereas Kirby's nicked. Love where he's at. I got him number six. I got no beef with your number three, though. I just have Crochet and DeGrom a little bit higher. I'm going for the boom over, you know, for the shoot the moon there with those two. But not like you can't shoot the moon with Gilbert. I want to be clear. He led baseball last year with an 0.87 whip and the most innings. Like, yes, he only got nine wins, but that is huge.
So massive.
Like huge.
Like the amount of volume you get with those ratios is just so huge for setting a great foundation. And I just can't
be understated.
I can't talk enough about how much I just love Logan.
Or can't be overstated. Sorry. But love Gilbert. Co-sign that all day. Let's get to Sale. So now we're going kind of on the other end here. Back to the age. You talked about it with your trio of potential. I don't want to call it a trio of doom, but you know, your trio of guys that like, okay, they have a lot of love, but then they have the one little black cloud hanging, whether it's injury, age, or in the case of Sale and DeGrom, both. You're coming off a 2.38 ERA, best in baseball, tied with Skubal for 18 wins, best in baseball, best home run rate, best strikeout per nine rate. Because again, I'm on BREF right now. I have Fangraphs tabs open too. I'm a company man, but I happen to be looking at their BREF profiles right now. He was brilliant and goes back to the point I made with Wheeler, like, don't pigeonhole a guy completely. Now, I'm not saying that you could have seen this coming because nobody did. People were in on Sale last year saying, I'm going to take the gamble at the price and all that. But I don't think anybody had him down for their side. And if you did and you got proof, feel free to send it to me. I'll give you your props. But this was a shock for him to come all the way back and win a Cy Young here. Where do we go from this Cy Young win with Chris Sale, now age 36?
I mean, as long as he's healthy, I think he's still just an elite pitcher. You know, the question is, can he stay healthy? We saw him struggle to stay healthy in the playoffs. You know, he couldn't pitch, you know, kind of at the stretch run right there because of back spasms. So, I mean, there is some risk here, but on a per inning basis, I think he's great. And I'm willing to take the gamble, especially if I kind of shore him up with a safer number two, you know, a Framber Valdez kind of guy. Where I feel like really confident I'm going to get innings from one of those guys. Cause I think just on a per inning basis, Sale is just so good.
Yep. I don't really have much to add there. So let's keep it going. Cause this guy's actually a point of consternation for a lot of folks. Corbin Burnes going out to Arizona has some folks irked, and I'm not going to say I don't get it at all, but I do wonder if it's maybe being overstated. Now, it hasn't created some great buying opportunity because where are we? A pitcher six? One, two, three, four, five. Yeah. So if you throw out Otani, it's pitcher six. So it's not like Corbin Burnes is going at this great discount, but his detractors are big time detractors. Our boys, Scott Genstead and Jeff Erickson, did their fades episode yesterday, which was awesome. You got to check that out on the RotoWire Fantasy Pod. Sunday nights are back, baby. They've been back for a little bit, but I just, I'm always looking forward to that on Sunday night to kind of wind down the week with Jeff and Scott. It'll be Scott and Toby next week because Jeff will be out in New York. But they've got some concerns, and Jeff made it as easy as possible. What's the next number in this sequence? 37, 36, 31, 26, 23. Those are the strikeout rates for Corbin Burnes the last 6 years, actually 5 years. I know how to count. Where does it go from here? I know, and Jeff pointed this out too, so I'm just quoting him basically verbatim here. There was a point by Corbin Burnes saying that there was maybe some intentionality behind that, not necessarily going for as many Ks, but maybe you overdid it a little bit. 23% is pretty rough. We don't want the ball in play. By the same token, he's 30. He still has a 13% swinging strike rate. If Corbin Burns spikes back up to 28, 29% strikeout rate this year, is anybody really surprised? Where are you at with Burnsy?
I have Burns as a top 10 starting pitcher. Though it's
confidently to, though, because I think a lot of people are ranking him there because quote unquote they're supposed to. Do you confidently rank Burns there?
I don't rank anybody confidently where I'm supposed to.
God like damn it.
I rank guys where the projections where my
that's
projections
fair. Say, are you drafting him then? Are you in yes, on Burns at this absolutely. Price point? Okay, that's the question I'm asking.
I think the only argument I can make that would say I'm not is I just have other guys who are going behind him ahead of him. But I have other guys who are going ahead of him behind him. So I'm totally fine taking Burns where he goes or as, you know, my SP1, if that's the guy that falls to me. And I'm very interested to see, like, as some of these quote unquote sexier options bust up, like, does he kind of bump down? And maybe I could end up with him in the third or fourth round of a main event draft. Because I would be totally stoked. Because
I would too.
One of the things that Corbin Burns does that other people don't is volume.
Man's pitches.
202 innings, 193, 194. Like those are his innings totals the last three seasons. I just talked about Logan Gilbert and how much I love him because of the volume. Yeah, okay, the strikeout rate is dropping. But what is one of the things we care about in spring training? We care about health. And with pitchers, we care about strikeouts and walks. It's 35% strikeout rate in spring training. Not saying he's totally back to being Corbin Burns, but is that still in him? I absolutely believe it is. And if he ends up the year as the number one starting pitcher, I'm not going to be surprised.
Yeah, and going to Arizona, you know, that's a park improvement. Maybe not like a great division improvement. I think it's probably neutral overall.
And great defense.
Brett's right there. Yeah. Great park and great defense. Wonderful outfield defense. Not that Baltimore didn't have a good one, but like that stays a constant for Corbin Burns going out to Arizona. So yeah, I haven't really landed him on him anywhere. Not because I'm running though. I am not that concerned. Now I will say, he was the ace of my main last year, and so I watched a lot of Corbin Burns. And did I get super frustrated with like those 3 and 4 strikeout games? Yes, especially because I was watching them and I was like, how does he have so few Ks? Because he would look great. Like the starts would look excellent, except for the modest K total. And I didn't quite understand why the strikeouts weren't happening. The swings and misses were, they were just happening at different parts of the count. So it is kind of interesting, but it just tells me that it's still in there and maybe not all the way back up into the 30s, but like I said, give me 27-28% rate. That'd be four or five points more than this past year at the volume that he comes at. That's another thing too, and I always pointed this out when we first started really looking at strikeout rates when they were starting to jump up, I guess now 7-8 years ago, we're into it pretty deeply. But some of these other guys that wouldn't have the best rates, like a Madison Bumgarner, would get dogged out for it. And it's like, unless you're in a canine league, though, who really cares about that? Because what is the volume of Ks? And 181 strikeouts for Corbin Burns last year was still pretty good. I'm going to see exactly where it ranks. Like, it's not going to be top 10 or anything. It was still 20th. So again, I drafted him to be better than that. I will grant that. But I got 15 wins, 194 innings of good ratios, and 181 Ks. I wasn't like losing my mind that Corbin Burns' strikeouts went down. And as long as he keeps churning out the volume, you're still going to have a pretty representative number of Ks. And that's my only point there with the K rate versus the volume piece.
We already mentioned the good ballpark. We all already mentioned the elite defense behind him. It's also a team that scored the most runs in baseball.
Right. Right.
I mean, like this is a fantastic landing spot for Corbin Burns.
And I think it's getting underrated because everyone wants to geek out over the strikeouts.
I think this is largely just about other people being excited about other pitchers.
I think that's fair too.
Yeah.
Let's move on then to Dylan Cease, who I think he's starting to inch up. People are starting to get some confidence back in him. Now, he's usually a buy the dip guy because you just feel confident that he's going to return back to the level of prominence that he can. But he's coming off of a good season here, and yet people are still buying. And I don't necessarily blame them. but I do understand that his volatility still exists. And if you look at it, this looks a lot like 2022. Not quite as good of an ERA, but the FIP is exactly the same at 310. The WHIP 108 last year to 111 in 2022. Strikeout rates were similar. Walk rates were similar. You get my point. And then in the middle season there, 2023, 458, 142, because the walks shot up, the hits shot back up. So like, is that volatility not still there with Cease? Could he not just do the exact same thing? So should we be this confident? I don't know. I'm a touch nervous at pick 45 overall for Dylan Cease as the seventh pitcher off the board. Actually, Reagans was supposed to be next. Sorry, I jumped to Cease, but we'll get to Reagans in a minute now that I've already set him up. But should we be a little bit more cautious on him?
I don't have him at 7. I have him at 17. So I am very, very
concerned. Yeah, I have him at 14. I like Cease. Yeah,
I don't dislike
a fellow mustachioed guy, but like I thought we would both be able to say like we're in, but according to the market, we hate his guts.
Yeah, this is the highest ever ranked Cease. I've been
at same in the past. 14.
This year was like, I was feeling like, oh, look, I'm finally kind of back in on
season. Yeah.
But no, I'm not.
the market laughed at you.
I just don't think you can ignore the ups and downs he's had over the course of his career. He's sometimes, you know, just can't get a hold of his mechanics. Sometimes he can't get a hold of his control. Like, I understand the upside, but,
right.
You know, one of the reasons I have Logan Gilbert as high as I do is because I want a guy with safety, and I don't feel like I get that from Dylan Cease. And so I'm not going to take him as an SP1. I think he's a great SP2, especially
wonderful SP2.
Logan Gilbert to start, but as top 10 starting pitcher, not for me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just a little rich for me. And I'll grant, you know, best walk rate ever. I'll even use a decimal form to make it look better. 8.5 instead of the 9% I would usually call that, because he's been at 10% the last 2 years. So it's not that big of an improvement, but it was his best. But, you know, it was a lot of hit suppression too. And that's tough to repeat, as we saw from 22 to 23. 197 average against 263 BABIP look a lot like the 189, 260 from 2022. So I'm repeating points at this juncture. I do like Cease. I truly do, but not at this price point. Let's circle back to Reagans, who I would definitely take above Cease. I have Reagans at 11. And I was big on him last year. In fact, I was getting a little annoyed that everyone else but me was getting credit for being hot on him. That's right. I'll be a little baby about it. I was like, hey, I was here loving him too. I was the one who put him in my, sneaky breakouts list when he was still on Texas. So I like Reagans a lot. I'm fully back in. Now, the market ended up getting so hot last year that it was another situation like the Cease thing where I was like, oh, I have him ranked high. I love him. And then I was like six slots off the market. So I didn't end up getting Reagans in a lot of spots. At 11 here, I think I could definitely get him in some spots. But as we see from these rankings, he does go seventh. So I'm not going to have a ton of him. Where do you come out with Cole Reagans?
I feel like he's being a little disrespected in the market. Like, Cole Reagans is just elite. Like, and I don't know why people don't I guess he's not. Where did he say he's going in ADP?
He's sixth starter off the board. Or actually, hang on.
I thought he was seven. Lower than that. Yeah.
It's seven. No, he's starting to inch up and get the due that he deserves.
I have him at 9, so I guess I'm
you're right there. Pick 40 in these last 12 drafts, 34 to 46 range, so a pretty tight range. I think he's getting the due that he deserves, and he'll probably start. He could be moving up too with like he could leapfrog Burns with the way some of the negative Burns talk is going. And I don't have a problem with that. I love Reagans. I think he's a Cy Young contender, and that's it. I don't have a butt after that. I love him. So I'm in.
I love the park. I love the team context. I love Cole Reagans. I have no problem starting him as my number one.
Absolutely. Jacob DeGrom is up next. We've already hinted at him, danced around him a bit. There are obvious concerns that he's missed a bunch of time. Now, what do you think about this recent news of the downshift in velo with some purpose behind it? That he is trying to maybe not go his all out, still reaching the upper reaches, but maybe not trying to sit 98 plus. so that he doesn't take as much juice off of his arm and put himself at as much risk? Do you buy that? B, do you like that for DeGrom?
Yeah, I kind of like that. You know, just give him an ability to potentially stay healthier for longer. I just don't know what you can project for innings. I landed on 140.
That's fine.
If he gets to 140, it makes him my number six starting pitcher.
Yeah.
I'm in, like, because there is the chance that he pops 170 and all of a sudden, like, he is just leaps and bounds the number one pitcher in baseball, because I think on a per inning basis, he's still the best guy out there. So I don't have a problem with him doing that. I trust him, and I trust him to pick his spots to use that velo to the best of his ability. So I just got to pray for health, man. Like, I'm less likely to do it in a 15-team league or a main event context than I am in a 10 or a 12. But in a 10 or 12, like, I think you should be making him your number three starter and just praying that he
number three healthy. Overall, you're saying.
Yeah, number
three. And just go for it.
Yeah.
No, I'm fine with that. I'm not necessarily out in a main event context. It'll really depend on what I've got, where he's going. And if he starts moving up again, I don't draft until a couple Saturdays from now, not next Saturday, but the one after that. So he could be right where we're saying Crochet is going to go at the back end of the first round consistently. And at that point, I probably won't get him, but I've been in on DeGrom. I've got some shares. I'm not afraid. He's healthy right now. He was healthy at the end of the year. We know that when he's healthy, he's still a monster.
Yeah.
So that means I do not run from him. All right. Let us continue on here.
Now we get ready to fight.
Blake Snell, you probably got some hater ass shit to say about him, even though he's an absolute stud. I do truly love the fact that he's going to the best team in baseball. I love Blake Snell. You know, I'm fully in the bag for him. I think every issue from last year can be blamed on the late start. That's what he said it was for. I take him at his word on that. That said, it's not like he hasn't had topsy-turvy seasons before where it takes a while to get going, but then when he gets going, he's the best pitcher in baseball type vibe. We play in Roto, though. How can people keep bringing this up when we play in Roto? If you're a head-to-head player, okay, sure, I get it. He was probably, you know, taking those face cavings that he was taking were stinging you early, and maybe you're losing some games that cost you the playoffs. But in Roto, you just care about the end numbers, no? And it was a 3.12 ERA, 1.05 WHIP, only 104 innings. But again, he had a no spring, late sign, still ended up great. I don't know, man. This guy's just awesome. I love Blake Snell.
I know you do. I want to love Blake Snell too. I just can't do it.
It's because he left your favorite team.
Nothing. I didn't like him last year either.
I know you didn't, and I made fun of it.
And I was victory dancing all the way through April and May.
How'd that finish? How'd that go for you, early victory lapper?
You ever do something athletic like dancing and then roll your ankle and be like, oh, man, that fucking hurt. Oh, yeah, that's how it felt. Though I will say there were people dropping him in shallower leagues early on. So, like,
and in mains, dude.
Yeah.
He got dropped in, like, mains and stuff. And, like, I'm sorry. I didn't get it at that time, though. And this is not like, oh, we're Twitch friends, and so I'm like caping for my dude, which I do cape for him. I will freely admit that. But the reason that I was not advocating for that is because while the time seemed to make sense, right? Because it was June. Oh, I waited 3 months. It was six starts. If it was three full months of an ugly ERA, okay. I would maybe even get behind it at that point and say, hey, he's just been really bad. It's a bad season. It was up, you know, false starts, couldn't get going, six crummy starts with no spring training. I just cutting him. It's not even with hindsight. You can go back to the pods during that time. And I was like, you gotta stay the course here until he gets healthy and can string a handful of starts together. The most starts he had in a row was three. The first three, April 8th, 14th, and 19th. Month off, comes back for two. Excuse me. It was two sets of three, because he did have three in a row there, May 22nd, May 27th, and then June 2nd. So two sets of three, but nothing was really getting going. Takes another month plus off, comes back on July 9th, and then away we go. He was great from the jump there, and then just, you know, didn't get touched the rest of the year. Gave up more than two earned runs once, and it was six innings, three runs, eight strikeouts at Washington. So I get some of the volume concerns, especially if you're talking about, you know, the Dodgers can play with him the way they do with all their guys and maybe not push him to the hilt. But I don't know. I'm I'm planning for $1.50, and I think it's going to be a great buy. By the way, were you surprised that he was like the first signing off the board after last year, how it went, and he just did not want to go through that again? Snell was like, get me signed.
He should have done that, yeah.
And the best team locked and loaded him. I'm curious where your projections are, though, because I'm really giddy on him. Where do you have him ranked?
I have him outside of my top 30 starters this year.
What the hell?
So,
what do you have him for, 12 innings?
I have him for 140 innings.
Okay, then that doesn't make sense.
354 ERA, 121 whip, 12 wins. I might bump up the wins.
What's the whip?
121.
Where does that ERA come from?
It comes from him
being... He hasn't been anywhere near that the last 3 years.
Let me look. Dun, 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 dun.
He hasn't really even been near that whip the last 3 years. 120, 118, and 105. 119, excuse me. I got to do the rounding there. At
121 whip is right around where...
I thought you said 124, excuse me.
Sorry,
excuse
no, me. 121.
121 is right there.
Yeah, it's right there.
Against the last two seasons.
I will say you might be a little right on the ERA.
The ERA is a bit high because he didn't give up a ton of homers either. And that's usually...
He is this spring, apparently. It's only given up one.
I wouldn't care if he gave up six.
Yeah.
Not in spring.
And I don't give a shit about that either. Maybe I do need to drop. I'm going to drop the ERA. Let's see.
Because I think Snell's one of those guys that on a per inning basis, you should still feel really confident in. So I thought you were going to hit me with like a 92 innings or something, which I still would have pushed back on, but I would have at least understood a bit more. But I don't know about a 3.5 ERA. I think whether you're looking at his actual ERA or the ERA indicators, they don't necessarily support that. So, you know, obviously huge win potential on the Dodgers. I'm not going to say he's going to set a career high because he did have 21 back in 2018, but I do think he's going to set his second best ever, which is 14 from 2023. I think he's going to be a 15 to 17 win guy this year, especially if he stays healthy and pitches. But yeah, I'm really excited. I think that they're going to treat him like they did Glasnow, where when he's pitching, he's going to be workhorse adjacent, right? Because I still would be reluctant to ever use the word workhorse for somebody like Tyler Glasnow, but it is worth noting that he threw at least six innings in 16 of his 22 starts last year. When healthy and going, Glasnow was able to pitch. I think that's how they're going to treat Snell, where when he's upright and going, they're going to treat him. They're not going to baby him with these 4 or 5 inning deals at all. He's going to be able to pitch.
Okay. I just updated his ERA. I dropped down to 3.21. Okay. And that put him still just inside the top 30.
Wow.
So
how many strikeouts? Like, I'm just, is there something, how many wins then?
12 wins. Maybe. The
okay. Wins. I mean, that's, I would go higher, but that's not even like egregious.
I'm going to give him 13 and we're going to see.
Okay. An extra win, by the way, folks, that can help. Like these projections, when things get compacted,
it's going to help a lot, I'm sure. Cause when I updated, the win total on Yamamoto by 2, it jumped him up like 20 spots.
That's right. We did that the other day.
Snell, that bumps him up to starting pitcher. Let's see, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25.
Okay. I mean, that's
I feel
better.
Pretty good about that. I've got him with 180 strikeouts in those 140 innings. It's the volume. I don't trust the health. I don't trust the Dodgers, a 6-man rotation. I don't trust them not to just kind of play games with the inning total.
When is this fabled 6-man rotation happening? I've seen nothing about it. That they're like, because Otani's not going to be back for
and that's
6 weeks.
That's part of the thing is like Otani, they said once Otani's back, they're going to go to a 6-man.
When the hell is that going to happen? They just said that they just slowing him down.
We don't know, but we also know the Dodgers will probably be leading this division by a lot come summer. Well, and I think they're going to, like I said in Plotapalooza, they've had one guy over the last two seasons go over 150, or actually over 140 innings in a season. It was Gavin Stone. I just have very little
faith. I guessed that properly.
Yes, you did. I have just very little faith that that is going to not continue.
I don't know. They're going to run away with the division, though.
I think
they won it by 5 last year. Arizona's better. I don't know. I, 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 I'm not so, They're not, but they're not that much worse either.
The Giants aren't better.
Yeah,
I mean, they are.
What the hell are you
not,
talking about?
But they're not much better. They're not much better.
It doesn't matter though. It's a couple games, right? They take a couple extra from the Dodgers. It cuts into that. I'm just saying, I don't think that they're going to be like coasting starting in June. I'm not saying they're not a great team. Of course they are. They're wonderful. But like, they still need their good guys to be pitching. I don't think they can just let it ride. Like the offense isn't, you know, it's amazing at the top. It thins out late. There's a lot of injury risk on this team. No, I think they still have to push. That's why I think when they're pitching, guys like Glasnow and Snell and maybe Yamamoto, this could be a transition for him to jump up this year.
Yeah, because I have the exact same concerns on Yamamoto is I don't know that I trust the Dodgers. I don't know that I trust his health. And just a heads up, I got about 10 minutes before I got a hard stop out.
No problem. So we will go to these next two guys, and then we will do the showcase of your gentleman here. So we will save these other three for later.
I like Yamamoto on a per inning basis. I think he proved that he is.
He's not next, but let's bring him in because he's two away. So Yamamoto, we already talked about him though, where you changed his projections recently. I'll let you finish here. He goes after Michael King, who we'll circle back to, and then we'll let you get a showcase here about somebody that we didn't quite get to today, but he is in your top 10, so we have to talk about him. So you're higher on Yamamoto than you were a couple days ago, but still concerned, almost carbon copy of the Snell issues.
Yeah, and that is what the problem is like, I just don't know what I can expect from a volume standpoint. And
well, what'd you give him? Remind me again, I'm sorry.
140.
Okay. $140 is pretty good for these superstars, though, on a per inning basis.
It is until you start comparing him to the other superstars of guys who I can fairly comfortably project 170, 180, 190 innings. Like, the volume matters. Like, especially when we're talking about guys with good ratios, like, that adds so much cushion to take.
Only if you guaranteed get it, though, right? Like, I understand you have to go with your projection and kind of see where you're at, right?
Like, anything can happen, obviously, but I feel more confident to say that I think it is more likely something will happen to Yamamoto, something will happen to Snell, than I might say on a guy like Tanner Bibee, who I can feel really comfortable about projecting.
Why?
Because he's shown the ability to stay healthy over a full season. We've never seen it with Yamamoto at the major league level.
In the majors, but I mean, we can't just memory hole what he did overseas, right? When he dropped .193 twice, a 171.
How many innings did he throw last year? 90? Like, I mean,
yeah, he got hurt. Absolutely. I'm not denying reality.
So like, am I really going to push him up to 170?
I mean, maybe maybe not as a projection, but I think I don't know. I think 150 is where I start, and you got him at 140 there. Now we're quibbling over 10 innings there. I don't want to do that, especially with our limited time here. But I don't know. I think some of this gets overblown, especially with somebody like that. He was so amazing after the ugly first outing. I'm not even taking that out of the picture. Leave that ugly Korea start in, and he went 3 ERA, 111 whip. And it has a bigger impact because he only threw 90 innings. And that tells you how great he was with a 29% K, 6% walk. I don't know. I want talent more than I want perceived safety. And I like Tanner Bibee, so I don't want to turn this into a referendum against him.
But here's the thing. All these guys I have going ahead of him have talent. Like, it's not like...
Not as much as him.
Maybe not, but I feel much safer, and I want to feel safer because I know and some of the
that's
other guys.
That's the illusion. Is that? And that's what I'm trying to get to.
But it doesn't end up. It doesn't end up being just an illusion. Like, a lot of these guys
in that the have aggregate, problems, it is the guys that you like more. You might hit on, sure. I agree with that, but don't the numbers say like 40% of guys are going to get on the IL at some point anyway? So it is mostly a mirage of safety. And that's what I'm saying. It's just, it goes back to my original point at the beginning. That split is tiny. So give me the more talented guys within reason. I don't want to stack Yamamoto, Roki, and DeGrom on the same team, right? I want to be measured here, while also understanding that just give me the better talent more than the perceived innings safety.
But my argument is, like, is he that much better of a talent that the risk is worth it?
Yes.
Over guys
like... And that's where we disagree then, because my answer is a resounding yes.
The next guy we're going to talk about, like Michael King.
Yes, like, absolutely. Okay. And I love Michael King. I do. I truly do. But Yamamoto, what he showed both overseas and getting here last year, and he's 26. He's still in a growth phase here. So, like, for him specifically, and for two-time Cy Young winner Blake Snell, like, I'm not bringing randos to the party here. I'm bringing studs, baby.
I don't know. So Snell listen. Seems kind of like a rando.
How dare you?
I love How dare him. You? He does. He's got it.
He's not a rando. I get what you're saying. You're saying he's a goofy dude. He's cool. He is a goofy dude.
He's super cool.
He's a cool, regular dude, plays video games, kind of nerdy. I love that. I love that about him. Let's talk Michael King, because I'm not here to dog him out either. I love Michael King. I do.
You hate Michael King.
28% K rate, 9% walk rate, though. Nowhere near the 6% for my boy Yamamoto. But 295 ERA, 119 whip. Now, that's an ERA whip disparity where I don't buy the ERA nearly as much. I think you do have to pay attention to the indicators. A 363 Sierra, a 333 FIP. You should be closer to those unless you're bringing the whip down in your projection. Now, maybe you think Michael King can improve the walk rate a little bit. I'd be surprised if he can improve the batting average because it was at 220. So if you think you can improve the walk rate, okay, maybe you can bring the whip down and keep the ERA low. But to me, he strikes me more as a mid to upper threes ERA type guy with a good whip, a good chance at volume. He jumped to 173 innings last year. I buy that. I'm in. I like Michael King, but again, not ahead of someone like Yamamoto or Blake Snell. Talk to us about Michael King.
I do like him above those guys just because I feel more confident I'm going to get the volume from him.
I know I'm like going at you here, and we have limited time. From a one-year starter who's going to be age 30, You've got more confidence?
I have more confidence than those guys. I don't have more confidence than, you know, Corbin Burns or...
Sure, but... You know. Well, why?
Because he
I'm just at a loss.
He showed it to me that he could do it.
So how come Snell never get credit for showing it? Because he didn't show it last year? He only showed it 2 years ago? He went 180 2 years ago.
But it also comes with like a 120 whip more than likely.
It came with a 119. Okay, that's what Michael King's was.
I don't have Michael King for a great whip either.
Okay.
I have him for 117.
Where is King ranked? Because this is just the ADP rank. He's not necessarily your next guy.
14.
Because I know you got somebody else ahead of him. And let's go ahead and get to that. So if you have any final words on King before we give you the showcase here.
I like King. He's not a guy that I have ranked as highly as other people. So I probably won't end up with him very often. But
okay.
I do like him. I do have some concerns, though, about like that massive innings jump and going from a reliever. Yep. Like, could that catch up to him? Absolutely. Am I projecting it? No, I projected him for 170
innings. I quite like him.
So I like him. But yeah, let's. I only got like 3 minutes left.
So you've got somebody in your top 10 that is not in the top 10 for anybody. He is creeping up, though. He's going up a lot. Some folks might know who we're talking about. Give us your pitch on Mr. Spencer Schwellenbach. Where is he? What are your projections? Why do you love him?
I have Spencer Schwellenbach projected for 175 innings, a 324 ERA, a .99 whip, and 188 strikeouts. The dude has amazing command control. He pitches on a great team. The only concern I have is what Jason has talked about in terms of the massive innings jump last year. But I just think he is so good, and he showed the ability to volume last year. If it blows up, it blows up. But there's no reason to think he can't kind of continue what he did after those first six starts into a full season. I just absolutely love Spencer Schwellenbach. I'm my number 8 starting pitcher this year.
Damn, 169 innings total, including the minors, by the way. So full season.
Yeah, I really just don't have very many concerns about him. Looks good in spring so far. Like, I'm all in on Spencer Schwellenbach. I've gotten him as my number 2 or number 3 starting pitcher in just about every draft this year. I'm going to continue to do that. If something goes wrong, then I'm screwed. But I absolutely love him.
I will say you're not, though. Everyone's going to lose one pitcher and probably at least one good pitcher, too. So I wouldn't even say that. Like, even if you're overstocked on him and he goes down, I don't think it kills your season. You're a good enough manager to rebound from it. You've got him basically double what he's like the 16th starter off the board, or halved, I should say, since he's your number eight. I respect it. You are planting your flag on a guy. He is awesome. He has a deep arsenal. He looked so good last year. I understand the concerns that people would push back to you on, but I like the flag planting here. So I'm going to be easy on you. Plus we have to go because you got to get going. But that is huge. That is huge. That's your guy right there. Spencer Schwellenbach. He's your Bailey Ober of this year, even to a higher degree. You did not have Bailey Ober this high last year. So best of luck with Schwellenbach. Best of luck out in New York, getting everything done with Tout. Go ahead.
Just a spoiler, since you guys probably will cover a lot of these starting pitchers. Bailey Ober, I have 11. Pablo Lopez, I have 12.
Damn. Love your twins out there.
Apparently I do this year.
I'm not against it. I like those twins too. I mean, they got the great K rate, great walk rate. They have home run issues. If they spike good home run suppression in a given year, they're gods. Like that's all there is to it with those guys. So, all right. We'll get going. Again, I think Joe and I will be able to get a show off while you're gone. You can teach me how to upload the new thing later. I know you got to go. Yep. Great talking, SPs. We'll talk early next week when you get back from New York.
Take it easy.